From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up yesterday, the new Democratic majority sent a clear signal that long-standing pro-life budgetary provisions are at risk in the midst of their fiscal priorities. Congressman Stephen Palazzo of Mississippi, a member of the Appropriations Committee in the House, joins me with the details in just a moment. The situation is worsening in the socialist nation of Venezuela, where dictator Nicolas Maduro was declared illegitimate in January by the country's National Assembly, which named Juan Guaido president. How long can Maduro hold out? More importantly, how long can the Venezuelan people hold on? What options are on the table for the United States? I'll talk with Republican Congressman Scott Tipton of Colorado. And at the bottom of the hour is a Pennsylvania school that dropped God Bless America from their morning announcements, getting bad legal advice. We'll talk with constitutional attorney Ken Klukowski later here on Washington Watch. And my hope is to get to the phones a little bit later. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. Hey, a few spots left and a few days left. If you'd like to join myself and my wife and a number of the FRC team on a majestic Alaskan cruise, you can find out more how you can join us July the 7th through the 14th. Go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. All right, yesterday, the House Appropriations Committee advanced approximately a bill that was about $204 billion. It's a draft bill that would fund the Departments of Labor, Education, Health and Human Services, and other agencies in fiscal year 2020. Now, this is one of the larger of the 12 appropriations bills that fund the federal government. The final vote in committee was 30-24. With all committee Democrats voting to approve it, and Republicans uniformly opposing it. Now, the Republican members made several attempts to change the bill on topics like abortion, family planning, and fetal tissue research, unsuccessfully. Joining me now by phone is Republican Congressman Steve Palazzo. He's joining me from Capitol Hill. In fact, may have to run in a moment to cast some votes. He represents the 4th Congressional District of Mississippi. And he is also a Marine veteran as well. Semper Fi, and welcome back.
Hey, Semper Fi, Tony, and thank you for having me on your show this evening.
Let's talk about the efforts that were made in the Appropriations Committee last night. In fact, you and I, we spoke late last night. We ran into each other. We were talking about this. Concerns under this new majority that a lot of the pro-life provisions that this administration has advanced, but even some that are, you know, have been historically bipartisan, are at risk now under this new majority.
Yeah, it almost seems like the Democrats and their newfound majority, they're doubling down on their most progressive, most liberal policies. And it's just, it amazes me, because I just believe they're absolutely tone deaf, not only to the Democratic Party, but also to the American people at large. I mean, you know, when we ask for something as simple as, you know, the Hyde Amendment, where we don't want our taxpayer funds providing federal abortions, that should be a no-brainer. But yet, you know, they struck down our Title X family planning bill that, you know, Congressman Roby from Alabama introduced, and it was a party line vote. And then we went on to the fetal tissue bill introduced by Andy Harris, which, you know, and he's a doctor. I mean, listen, when he speaks, he speaks so eloquently on the issue and then intelligently, because he's been through this stuff where people have tried to force him to you know, abandon his religious beliefs and perform certain procedures. So this guy knows almost everything about these arguments and from a medical standpoint. But yet they you know, voted down again on party line the use of newly aborted children's fetal tissues. And you know, we went on to Born Alive bill, where our ranking member, and, you know, we've already had almost 200 members of the House sign a petition on this bill, to where, and it's simple, it doesn't take a woman's right to an abortion away, you know, which is what the Dems try to scare you. They say, well, we're going to take, you know, reverse Roe versus Wade. They say, well, we're going to harm a woman's right or to health care. It doesn't do any of those things. It's plain and simple. If a baby that was intended to be aborted is born alive, then what that happens is that baby receives certain rights to medical attention. And yet, once again, they voted that down along party lines. And it was a very disappointing day because, you know, they say all these catchy words, but they never really tell you at the end what – you know, what the other side is going to be faced with. And that's where I'd like to talk real quick about the so-called conscience, the prohibition on conscience protections introduced by Congresswoman Barbara Lee. And, you know, we in America, we feel like, you know, we have constitutional rights to freedom of religion. We can express our religious beliefs, and that it would be unconstitutional and wrong for us to be forced to do the opposite. Where her bill literally goes out of the way, and it mandates any healthcare professional must participate in medical practices such as abortions, even if it goes against their deeply held religious beliefs. And that's where my jaw drops, Tony. Mm-hmm. Is that, I mean, it's just sitting simple. Like, look, I mean, it's easy. Let's uphold the Hyde protections, and then, you know, they finagle money through grants and do things like, and we're always trying to shut that down as well, like the Title X, you know, planning to Title 10 planning to, you know, money and grants to Planned Parenthood. But this is open and so transparent. You know, they used to at least to try to disguise
right. The effect of that, take the one of conscience, where trying to force providers to, as you say, engage in abortion and other activities that violate their moral beliefs, their conscience. What that does is it restricts access because it will drive some people out of the profession, meaning there are less options and fewer providers.
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, if you know that you could be subject and punished under law for not providing a medical practice, even though there might be nine other people lined up to do that, someone will target, our medical professionals that have actually, you know, deeply held religious beliefs. They will set them up
right,
so they can go after them in a court of law. Even though there's others that would do it, you know, I want my doctor to have a deeply held religious belief. I don't want a bunch of atheist doctors running around that don't value life. I mean, it just doesn't make sense. But, yeah, I mean, if the medical professionals realize that they can be sued, they can be banned, they can be punished after spending, half their life, you know, achieving a medical degree, I think the best of the best are not going to enter into the profession.
Exactly.
Once again, it's going to hurt our industry.
Exactly.
We already have a doctor shortage. This is going to make it worse.
They'll choose another profession. They won't go into it because they don't have to choose between their profession and their faith. And so less options are available to the people. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Congressman Steve Palazzo of Mississippi, my guest. Let me focus in on a couple of these. Title 10 funding. This is the co-location provision that the Trump administration put forward. Very simple. Goes back to what was in place during the Reagan years and the first Bush presidency, and that was if you do abortions, you cannot get Title 10 family planning funding, federal funding, to fund that under the same roof that you do abortions. It just says if you're going to do abortions, that's fine, you can do it, but it's going to be on your own dime. The administration had the courage to do that, and we applauded it. This is trying to undo that in this appropriations bill.
That's correct. The base bill, which, by the way, I feel, and from what I've heard, that no Republican truly had input in. We were able to submit our wants and our wishes on behalf of our constituents, but I don't think there was any across the table negotiating, especially when it comes to provisions like this. The Democrats drafted this bill pretty much so solely behind closed doors in darkness from the American people, and that's where they went out of their way to basically prohibit the Secretary of HHS from adopting the rule that the president, has done just recently, ensuring the physical and financial separation of facilities from abortion providers. So you're absolutely right. I mean, it's what you can't separate the two.
Right.
We might not be paying for that doctor, but I mean, if we're paying for the real estate and the table and the janitorial
overhead
and the lights,
right.
Yeah, we're culpable. We're just as guilty. And that's the thing is, like, listen, I mean, you know, less than 10 to 25% of all Americans pay the majority of the taxes in this nation. And, you know, we should be able to say, I know we can't say everywhere how we want our money used, but this is, you know, almost like in the Constitution where, you know, our religious freedoms is protected, and you shouldn't be using our money, just like they can't force the Catholic Church to provide abortions or go against their conscience, even though they're trying and they will continue to try. But we've been, you know, the church has been fortunate in lawsuits to protect their right of conscience. It just doesn't make any sense. I mean, it's beyond, it's like let live. I mean, they're going out of the way to force us to abandon our
right.
religious conscience, and it's sickening. And you know, they're going again polar opposite of what I believe they're you know, the majority. Let's just say this. Let's not use labels. Like, you know, I know their base probably loves this. Our base hates it. But I'd say the majority of the American people, I do not want taxpayer funds to provide an abortion.
Right.
And, you know, and they probably support the Born Alive bill. They probably support the prohibition on research on fetal tissue. So I do believe they're absolutely tone deaf. And but as a nation, I actually feel like, you know, again, the majority, maybe not the majority that controls the House of Representatives, wants our nation to return to, you know, sound moral values. And that's why your House Republicans are not going to stop fighting for exactly that.
Well, I applaud you for that, Stephen. I hope you continue, and I hope we're able to preserve some of those longstanding pro-life provisions that have been on appropriations bills for over 40 years, which, you know, heretofore have been pretty much bipartisan in support. But it's a new day, and so every pro-life provision is going to be a fight. Congressman Palazzo, I know you got to run, vote. I want to thank you for joining us. Great to talk with you. Thanks for stopping in today.
Hey, Tony, it's always a pleasure, and thank you again for having me on. Take care.
All right. Congressman Stephen Palazzo of Mississippi. Look, I'm going to return to this. We're almost out of time in this first segment, but I want to talk a little bit later in the program specifically about the fetal tissue. This is a big deal. We're talking about, you know, this goes back to the Planned Parenthood, you know, where they were trafficking baby body parts. This is a little bit different, but it's creating a demand. And what we saw were members saying, look, we're just, until we get clarity on and transparency, we don't want to be using aborted baby fetal tissue. It creates an incentive for some in the abortion industry. So we're going to talk about that a little bit later with one of the FRC team members that's been tracking this. But next, we're going to transition to something else. We want to look at Venezuela. How serious is the situation down there? How long can Maduro hold on? More importantly, how long can the people hold on? That's next.
There is unprecedented religious persecution around the globe. In recent years, research has found increasing governmental and social hostility towards religious believers worldwide. For the last 10 years, Christians have been harassed in more countries, including the United States, than any other religious group. While the specific threats to religious freedom vary in type and intensity, one common source is the legal and cultural support for apostasy, blasphemy, and anti-conversion laws, which often threaten the freedom to choose or change one's faith. In a new publication from Family Research Council, we list which nations around the world have these unjust laws on the books and spotlight people who have faced severe penalties simply for sharing or changing their faith. For more information on religious hostility due to apostasy, blasphemy, and anti-conversion laws around the world, visit frc.org/ABA laws. That's frc.org/ABA laws.
When you look at what is going on in our country and culture today, do you often ask, what can I do? Well, mark your calendar for the Values Voters Summit on October 11th through 13th in Washington, D.C., and join thousands of Americans just like you who want to change the culture in a way that human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Past speakers include President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, Secretary Mike Pompeo, Kirk Cameron, Dana Loesch, and Ben Carson. In addition, there will be opportunities to meet with organizations and attendees that share a Christian worldview, and informational sessions focused on the topics of life, religious liberty, the LGBT movement, national security, the realities of socialism, and more. On October 11th through 13th, stand with thousands of Values voters to restore our great nation. Registration is now open. Don't miss the early bird price of $99. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The situation is worsening in the socialist nation of Venezuela, where dictator Nicolas Maduro was declared illegitimate back in January by the country's National Assembly after corruption and questions surrounding the election. Well, the assembly named Juan Guaido as president. Now, how long can Maduro hold out? There was efforts, they thought, last week that he might fall as more defected away from him. But the question now is, how long can the Venezuelan people hold on? And what options are on the table for the U.S.? To answer that question, Colorado Congressman Scott Tipton joins us. Congressman, welcome to Washington Watch.
Tony, great to be with you.
Now, I saw a tweet in which you said the U.S. must remain strong in its support of the Venezuelan people and the legitimate government led by interim President Juan Guaido. What considerations, what efforts should the United States do to back Guaido?
We need to continue to make sure that we're putting on every sanction that we possibly can to be able to pressure the illegitimate government under Maduro in Venezuela right now. One thing that we can do that happens to be on our soil, it's Venezuelan property. It's called their embassy. It's currently occupied by Code Pink. We've called on Secretary Pompeo to make sure that we're doing all that we can to be able to get that back in the hands of the Venezuelan people and to make sure that we're creating opportunities for them to be able to improve their lives because there's real suffering going on under the socialist regime.
Now, what do we know? We know the president had a conversation with President Putin from Russia, who said, well, we're not really involved in here. We're just kind of ongoing relationships there. But it suggests that Maduro is being propped up by all the bad actors. You got Russia, you got Cuba, you got China. What do we know?
You know, that's certainly my understanding, Tony. We think that Maduro was ready to be able to leave the country until the Russians stepped in. Apparently, Maduro, through the regime, owes the Russians a lot of money that they'd like to be able to have paid back, but they're trying to be able to prop him up. It's actually in direct conflict with our policies in terms of making sure that we are not going to have foreign influence in our hemisphere, and we need to make sure that we're taking a strong position against Russian interference, as well as continuing that pressure on the Maduro regime.
You know, Congressman Tipton, there's been some stories. You know how these inside stories in D.C., kind of the rumor mill, suggesting that the president's disappointed with the advice he got from John Bolton to be aggressive here. I happened to be at the White House today talking to some folks up there, and they say that's absolutely not true. The president is solidly supportive of John Bolton, appreciative of the advice he's gotten from him. And you see, Senator Rubio speaking out, saying that military intervention should be on the table if necessary. I don't see, while it may not have evolved as quickly as we had hoped, I don't see any daylight between the president and his national security advisor on this. In fact, I think that you're seeing more and more support build for the president's aggressive stand as the humanitarian crisis builds.
You know, I believe that's true as well. You know, I think that Mr. Bolton is giving good advice. Certainly, any military action, we don't want to have to do. We want to make sure that we exhaust all other options. But when we're seeing people suffering, all of the basic needs that they have that are not being addressed, we've got the Maduro regime that is actually stopping assistance at the border, making sure these people are going to continue to suffer. That is not acceptable. This used to be one of the richest countries in the world, a place that a lot of Americans were becoming expats to. It was a great place to be able to go to, completely ruined the country, taken down a very prosperous economy. And so we need to keep all options on the table, but any military action would certainly be the very last resort.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure how they managed to do this polling, but I've seen some polling out of Venezuela, where 80% of Venezuelans believe Russia and Cuba have invaded and colonized their country. And 90% of Venezuelans want a change of government. They want to see Maduro out. So it certainly looks like the Venezuelan people are tired of what's happening down there.
Well, I think we see that with the General Assembly. They've already told Maduro he needs to be able to go. Guaido needs to be the acting president of the country. We've recognized him. Our European allies have. Many surrounding countries have as well. There's no one standing with him except dictatorships and totalitarian regimes in the world. That says an awful lot. And so I think that we're on firm ground. We're standing up what's best for the Venezuelan people. If you have the belief, as many of us do, that there is a true humanitarian crisis that's going on, and it does need to be addressed.
Any sense of, it's all revolving around Maduro. I mean, but based on what we're hearing coming out of the country, how much longer do you think this can last?
You know, it's pretty much in his hands. I think, we've obviously seen Guaido try to be able to get the military to be able to rally around him. It's gotten some support, but it shows the fear that totalitarianism, socialist government that he's put into place, has put even into the military.
That's
they
a good
know
point.
Their families, their friends are suffering as well.
Yeah, that's a really good point. A lot of fear that if it doesn't work out. And quite frankly, Congressman Tipton, if you look at, it hasn't happened under this administration, but when you look at the vacillation that has occurred in American foreign policy in the previous administration, you could see why some might not take our word to the bank.
And I think that's where I'll give President Trump a lot of credit. He's followed through on what he said he would do. And I think when we've had administrations in the past that have vacillated in terms of the policy and following through, drawing red lines, and then once they're crossed, not following through, we see governments that no longer take it seriously. We've got a president that they need to take seriously. We will be in support of the Venezuelan people.
Yep, it's certainly a new day when it comes to America being true to its word. Congressman Tipton, thanks so much for joining us today.
Tony, thanks for having me on.
All right. Congressman Scott Tipton of Colorado. To find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. Yeah, you know, we still have to deal with the residue of the previous administration, but I think the world is beginning to see that this administration means business. And I think the president will definitely see this through as it pertains to Venezuela. All right, when we come back, a school district in Pennsylvania being threatened by one of those atheist groups about saying God bless America. So what'd they do? Well, they waved the white flag. We'll talk about it next.
Grandpa Jerry, what are you doing?
What? What does it look like I'm doing? I'm sitting on this bench enjoying my tea and reading the news.
You always tell me that I need to stand firm for faith, family, and freedom. Why aren't you standing?
Well, now with this new Stand Firm app, I can sit and stand at the same time. And if you got the Stand Firm app, you could learn something besides that garbage of peddling in public schools. You could listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, where Tony and leaders on the Hill and other culture influencers weigh in on current events. You can read FRC's latest publications and articles responding to what's going on in the news, like this.
Oh.
You can play trivia and earn points for free prizes. You can even access all of FRC's publications directly to sharpen your mind and give you the ability to discern the thoughts and intentions of the heart.
I can be a mind reader?
Kid, that's from the Bible, the richest piece of literature on God's green earth.
Can I see this stand-up? Wow, this would keep me informed. Visit frc.org/app to download FRC's Stand Firm app.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us. The website, tonyperkins.com. All right, a Pennsylvania school dropped the practice of saying God bless America after the Pledge of Allegiance every morning following a complaint from the Freedom From Religion Foundation, an atheist group up in Wisconsin. The Associated Press reported that the Freedom From Religion Foundation filed a complaint against the Siebold Elementary School in Springfield on March 25th after a parent notified them that Peter Brigg, the school's principal, said God bless America over the school's loudspeaker every day after the Pledge of Allegiance. Now, they said they have stopped this based upon their attorney's recommendation, beginning, I think that was on a statement that they made May the 3rd. Joining me now to discuss this story and as to whether or not the school's on good legal standing or getting good legal advice is our good friend, constitutional attorney Ken Klukowski. Ken, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me, Tony.
All right. So this is, we're very familiar with the Freedom From Religion Foundation. They target schools, usually rural schools that can't really afford legal fights, and they send these threatening letters. And too often you see these, whether they're schools, city councils, or whatever they may be, they seem to capitulate and wave a white flag. Should they be waving a white flag in this case?
Well, Tony, in this case, they're in a gray area in the law. This is one where the U.S. Supreme Court in 1992, by a 5-4 decision, held that having prayers at a high school graduation ceremony was unconstitutional. And then in the year 2000, by a 6-3 margin, the court extended that to also cover Friday night football games. Now, the reality is the membership of the Supreme Court has changed since then. Those decisions were wrong the day they were handed down, and they're wrong today, and they ought to be overruled. If the makeup of the court was still the same, and I were advising the school, I would tell them that that in a court challenge they might face an uphill fight, that this is not a matter where any one decision from the U.S. Supreme Court automatically dictates an outcome and thus can't say whether it's a surefire winner or a sure loser. But I think in this environment, where this is an open question of law and you appear to have a majority on the Supreme Court that is moving back towards the original public meaning of the Establishment Clause, I think they'd have a real chance if they were to fight it in court. But it's a case that could go either way until someone has the courage to stand up, take this matter into court, and give the Supreme Court ultimately a chance to clarify the true meaning of the Establishment Clause in this sort of a context.
So just the phrase, the Freedom From Religion Foundation argued that the phrase "God Bless America" constituted a prayer, and therefore that is why it is unconstitutional. I mean, can you not make – I mean, it's also a song. It is a declaration. So what constitutes a prayer?
Well, and that is, in fact, Tony, why this would be an open question, or what we call in the law a question of first impression in court. The Supreme Court starts every day's session by saying, "God save the United States and this honorable court." Every federal court that I've ever been in has some variation of those words that the marshal proclaims right before the judges or justices take their seats. Now, there are those who would say that, and in fact, there was a case on this matter involving the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit, where there was another atheist challenge. In fact, guess who brought the case? It was the people from FFRF, from the Freedom From Religion Foundation, Dan Barker, the atheist co-president there, but also formerly a minister. Before he entirely forsook the faith, asked to be able to give a secular pronouncement to the members there. And the D.C. Circuit, which is one of the currently one of the more liberal-leaning federal appeals courts, in fact, I would say the third most liberal court after the Ninth Circuit and the Fourth Circuit, they sided with the House of Representatives under its former general counsel, Tom Hungar, a Republican appointee who's now back in private practice, where they won on the idea that a prayer is some sort of address to the divine. And that since Mr. Barker did not want to, obviously was not praying to any sort of higher power, instead his audience would be human beings on a horizontal level rather than vertical, what he sought to do was not a prayer, and therefore Congress was not violating any rights by excluding him from giving that. I think in this matter, this would be a Pennsylvania case. It would go to a federal district court in Pennsylvania, then up to the Third Circuit. I would think that they should adopt that kind of standard, and in which case, this is not a prayer.
But I want to ask you another question on that. Can you hold on through the break?
Yeah, you bet. Of course.
Because in the response, the Freedom From Religion Foundation praised the school's decision, but you can see in their statement they kind of lamented the fact that God is also referenced in the pledge. So, I mean, the pledge is in their targets, too. They won't stop with "God bless America." They want "one nation under God" gone, too. We're going to talk about that next. Folks, don't go away. We're going to continue our conversation with Ken Kulkowski. Then I want to return to the appropriations bill that was in committee yesterday, because some important stuff there you need to know about. Don't go away. Coming back after this.
Happy birthday to you.
In states like New York, Virginia, and Vermont, radical legislation has been written legalizing abortion late in pregnancy, when babies can feel pain and are able to live outside the womb.
Happy
They've gone even further, repealing protections of infants born alive, allowing killing even after birth.
Happy birthday.
Congress has yet to protect the life of every newborn baby. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com to send Nancy Pelosi a newborn hat to show Congress every new life should be welcomed with warmth and love, not hate, not death. End birthday abortions. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com.
Happy birthday to you.
Paid for by Family Research Council.
When you look at what is going on in our country and culture today, do you often ask, what can I do? Well, mark your calendar for the Values Voters Summit on October 11th through 13th in Washington, D.C., and join thousands of Americans just like you who want to change the culture in a way that human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Past speakers include President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, Secretary Mike Pompeo, Kirk Cameron, Dana Loesch, and Ben Carson. In addition, there will be opportunities to meet with organizations and attendees that share a Christian worldview, and informational sessions focused on the topics of life, religious liberty, the LGBT movement, national security, the realities of socialism, and more. On October 11th through 13th, stand with thousands of Values voters to restore our great nation. Registration is now open. Don't miss the early bird price of $99. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
I'm Tony Perkins, and this is Washington Watch, the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, Ken Kulkowski, my guest, constitutional attorney. Ken, all right, I want to go back to that question before that I asked you before the break. All right, the Freedom From Religion Foundation, you know, threatening this school if they did not drop the statement that was made over the PA system, God Bless America, after reciting the Pledge of Allegiance in the morning. Now, schools dropped it based upon the advice from their lawyers, I guess not wanting to have to file or defend this in court. But if you look at the pledge has one nation under God. What is the difference between stating God Bless America and reciting the Pledge of Allegiance, which includes a reference to God?
Tony, a two-part answer to that. First of all, you're exactly right that there is no material difference between God Bless America and saying the Pledge of Allegiance, for that matter, also posting the national motto, In God We Trust. And I would say that for any of those, the reality is that according to the original public meaning of the Establishment Clause, all of those things are permitted. And I think all of those would currently fare well in a court environment. No guarantees, but there's a real fighting chance for each of those. Government lawyers, especially for local governments, especially like a smaller school district, first of all, Establishment Clause jurisprudence is way off the beaten path. Lawyers can easily go their whole careers and never see an Establishment Clause case. So there's no reason for a school district attorney to be a subject matter expert. What they are, however, is risk averse. They're trying to keep the school system mm-hmm. out of a lawsuit unless they right. think it's a guaranteed victory. I will say that, of course, you mentioned that I litigate. I mean, I litigate religious liberty cases for First Liberty Institute, the largest law firm in the country that's exclusively dedicated to protecting religious liberty for all Americans. As you know, we have an Establishment Clause case at the U.S. Supreme Court right now, where a decision will be coming down next month. I have to tell you, if the school system would call First Liberty and talk to us, we would need to get a lot more details about the precise facts, but we would take a real serious look at possibly representing the school system free of charge in this regard. seeking to vindicate the rights
right.
of the students and teachers there, and not to let hard left-wing activists have a heckler's veto to drive even common expressions of faith out of the public square.
And so my question, or the reason for asking that question, is that these actions, when they go after, God bless America, knowing that, as you said, there's no material difference between that and the under God and the pledge, that
right.
this is chipping away at the foundation. If they can get a school district, if they can get a city council, if they can get someone to retreat on God bless America or a prayer, that's an erosion that takes place under of the foundation of our freedom of expression, freedom of religion in this country. And so what needs to happen is that we need to have elected officials that are willing to stand up to defend this. I know you're absolutely right. They're risk averse. They don't want to have to pay any money. They don't want the insurance companies don't want them doing this. But the long-term effect is we lose who we are as Americans.
Well, there's no question about that. And because in the 1940s, Tony, in the Barnett case, the Supreme Court held that it violates the free speech clause of the First Amendment, which is there right alongside the Establishment Clause. The Supreme Court said it violates the free speech clause to compel someone to say the Pledge of Allegiance. So obviously this part of saying the pledge in the school, that part is voluntary because the Supreme Court right. held 70 years ago that it can't be required. So it's voluntary. So this right. recitation, this proclamation of God bless America is therefore also voluntary. There's nothing compulsory about it. And so I really think that if properly argued with the current composition of the court, if they had the right legal representation, if they're willing to take a stand, I think expressions like God bless America in this school would have a solid chance of standing up in court. And as you're saying, when there is a cultural assault upon American values, upon American heritage, the only way to preserve those freedoms is to be willing to take a stand.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's exactly what I'm saying. Ken Kulkowski, as always, great to have you on the program. Thanks so much
for
joining us.
Thank you for having
me,
sir. God bless.
All right, Ken Kulkowski. That is exactly my point. And we need to elect men and women who will defend what America is about, and that there is nothing more important than our first freedom. And every time we capitulate, every time we wave a white flag, we lose ground for subsequent generations. That's how we got into the mess that we're in. Look, some things are worth fighting for. Some things are worth standing for and not yielding. You know what? I think it's time for some of you to run for school boards, city councils, state legislatures, and fight for the things that made America great. America will never be great until it's good, and America will never be good until we return to that core foundation of our religious freedom and our faith in God. Okay, I want to go back and touch this on this appropriation issue because I want to show you how important these things are, the contrast between the two parties. Joining me now to talk about this in studio is Connor Simmelsberger. He is the legislative assistant here in our government affairs, and he's been tracking this very, very closely. Connor, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony. Glad to be on today.
Let's talk. I want to go to the fetal tissue issue. In fact, I have a couple of clips I want to play. Dr. Andy Harris, who's regularly on this program, a physician from Maryland, has been in Congress. He's on the Appropriations Committee. And one of the issues we have been really pushing is to end funding of fetal tissue research. And so I want to play this clip of Dr. Harris. Bobby, play that clip of Dr. Harris.
The amendment's simple. It says that none of the funds available by this act may be used to conduct or support research using human fetal tissue. The idea that there's no transparency on the use of human fetal tissue, I think, means that the committee should take a position that until this is forthcoming, we just don't fund tissue research using human fetal tissue.
Now, that amendment failed. We'll talk about some of the pushback. But why is this important?
Yeah, Tony, this is a really important issue. It's something we've been tracking really closely, especially in this markup here yesterday. And it was great to see someone like Andy Harris with his medical background to stand up for this. He gave a great example of his time at Johns Hopkins. They were doing projects with fetal tissue from lambs, fetal lambs. And even the animal activists came out saying, hey, there's some moral boundaries here. We shouldn't be experimenting on fetal lambs. And then yesterday in the markup, the Democrats didn't even seem any question of what was going on with fetal tissue from human babies. So they seem to have no moral boundaries at all when it comes to finding the promise of maybe a cure could come for cancer, maybe a cure could come from these issues. But there are very little results that come from it, and they don't seem to have any reason to hold back, especially from taking tissue from beings like the most vulnerable among us, you know, innocent lives in the womb, to reach that end for them.
Now, this has been an issue in this administration. We've been working with Department of Health and Human Services, and they've been trying to dial back the use of fetal tissue, the funding that's been out there, because some would argue that if you're creating a demand by putting funding out there for fetal tissue research, which, I know that women are not going to abort their babies so that there's fetal tissue, but the abortion industry benefits from it because they're able to turn around and potentially profit off this, as we saw with the harvesting of baby body parts.
That's exactly right. And Representative Harris hit exactly that point yesterday. Many of the Democrats love to make the claim that those videos we saw in 2015 from the Center for Medical Progress were heavily edited or doctored. But time and time again, forensic groups and courts have ruled that those videos weren't edited. And in those videos, you'll see these abortionists talk about performing an abortion, even a particular way to get a certain body part, to get a brain. Things that, you know, just don't even pass the eye test when you see that happening. And so it does drive up a demand for them, especially if they know they can profit to some degree. We're waiting for the Department of Justice to finish their investigation into those issues, but we hope a good conclusion from that. So it's great to see some action on that. And to your point about the administration, they have done some good work. They offered, an additional $20 million to find alternatives to fetal tissue research, which we're really glad to see that. But we'd love to do more. For us, it's a moral issue to take tissue from the most vulnerable among us and experiment on that tissue with no boundaries or no ends. That becomes a moral issue, especially for us Christians. So we would urge the administration to do more to stop those contracts that they know now, like you said, until we can have more information about what's going on down at the clinic level and these contracts that they have.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com, lots of resources there for you. Let me give you the Capitol switchboard number, because I think you need to have it handy. There's a lot of things. You've got the Equality Act coming up next week. You've got these appropriations bills. They're not on the floor yet, but any opportunity you have to communicate with your member of Congress, 202-224-3121, 202-224-3121. Connor Semmelsberger, my guest, we're talking regarding the appropriations hearing yesterday. Now, Connor, there was also the issue of sex education came into the appropriations bill. There was, I wouldn't even say parity, but there were some dollars under the Trump administration, about $35 million, if I'm correct, that went to risk avoidance education. That's what replaced the abstinence, but it basically tells kids that don't engage in sex until you're married, because until you're married, for all the right reasons. That came under attack in the committee yesterday.
That's exactly right. Democrat Barbara Lee specifically attacked that, saying, you know, this abstinence only until marriage program harms children, doesn't provide them all the information that they need, and in favor of what they call the comprehensive sex education program. So,
which is basically training for sex. I mean, it goes in a lot of it now includes all the LGBTQ stuff down all the way. I mean, we're looking at this going into kindergarten.
That's exactly right. They even increased that program by an additional $9 million while completely zeroing out the $35 million that was there last year for that sexual risk avoidance education. And you're right. They want more money to promote it to more kids as young as first grade, second grade, very young kids. And they, in those programs, they work from the assumption that all teens and all kids are already having sex and just telling them to avoid risk or, you know, as long as you're careful with this, when really, like we've talked about, avoiding that risk altogether is the best way for teens to fulfill their dreams, to succeed later on in their careers by completely taking that risk away.
Well, you know, I've made this point many times. And, you know, when it comes to tobacco, which is, you know, politically incorrect, you know, they tell kids don't smoke. They don't give them a filter to put on their cigarette.
Right.
But why can't we do that with sex ed? Why can't we just tell them no?
Yeah, and even if you look at some of the reports, HHS even put out a report saying that those comprehensive programs have had actually little to even negative effects, meanwhile the avoidance programs have had tremendous success in these programs, especially when the parity for funding is not even close, $35 million to $110. It's not even close, and those avoidance programs have taken into account the whole child, the whole teen, right? Not just your sexual health, but your entire person, you know? And that's a more wholehearted, substantive program to teach our teens that are going to be our, you know, our future workers and future parents and families to come. So I think including that funding in this bill is going to be something I hope Republicans will fight for. It's had great success, and we'd love to even see more of that funding for sexual risk avoidance.
Connor, we're almost out of time here, but I was going to say any crazy things, but anytime the Congress gets together, there are crazy things. Anything that stood out yesterday that was just like, wow, I can't believe that.
Yeah, and it was the opening statements by Rosa DeLauro saying she is here to wipe away the Hyde Amendment. And the only reason that they included the Hyde Amendment to ban taxpayer funding for abortion was because of the president's veto. So we're glad that the president issued a statement saying he would veto the bill without the Hyde Amendment. But I think it's surprising, and it's going to come to play in this election, that if Democrats take the White House and Democrats take over Congress, there's going to be little standing in the way to protect our taxpayer dollars from funding abortion.
And that is so important, because for the last 40 years, the Hyde Amendment has been a bipartisan annual rider to the appropriations bill. Mm-hmm. But in 2016, the Democratic Party, in their platform, said they wanted to see the Hyde Amendment annihilated. There could not be a clearer contrast between the two major parties.
Yep, I agree.
Connor, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate the good work you do on Capitol Hill.
Thanks, Tony.
All right. Folks, you need to weigh in. You need to be contacting and talking to your member of Congress. This, again, I can't say it enough, could not be a clear contrast between the two parties when you look at the issue of life. They want to force you to pay for abortion. Republicans want to see the sanctity of human life return to America. All right, out of time, but until next time. I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, where he says in Ephesians 6, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit tonyperkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.